This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. The Washington Capitals punching their ticket to the postseason yesterday. They'll now face off against the New York Rangers in the opening round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Spencer Carberry is the successful coach that navigated some tricky waters down the stretch and got his team into the postseason. Spencer Carberry, head coach of the Washington Capitals, joins me now. Spencer, thanks so much for this, and congratulations. How does it feel?
Appreciate it, Jeff. It felt really good. I don't think going through that and all the ups and downs we had, even in that last week, I don't think I really wrapped my head around that moment coming of us qualifying for it. But last night sort of hit us on the travel back home on the train, and pretty great feeling. We've put a lot into this thing, and to see the guys get rewarded and be able to play in the playoffs is it's a huge accomplishment.
There's so much to talk about your team, and I want to get to the third period yesterday here in a couple of seconds. But can you describe, the last couple of weeks for you, or maybe the last 3 weeks for you, or I don't know how far back you want to take it, maybe to that Saturday afternoon Brian McClellan press conference where it seemed as if, you know, the Capitals were saying, it's just about the youth at this point, and then all of a sudden the Capitals start to make playoff noise. What's the last little while been like for you, Spencer?
Yeah, we actually were reflecting on that as a staff last night, and we pointed to that moment right the day before the trade deadline, March 7th in Pittsburgh. We had just moved Anthony Mantha on to Vegas. Kuznetsov was in on his way to Carolina coming out of the program, or he was actually down in Hershey at the time.
And
Joel Edmondson was held out and was on his way to Toronto. And so it was clear what was going on and the direction that we were going from management. But we walked into Pitt that night, and I just remember leaving that game. Like, we played really well, but we also played really hard. And Pitt was, you know, going through the Gensel thing, and so we didn't get their best. But I walked away going, like, this team, we are not throwing in the towel. These guys want no part of throwing in the towel. And we still had our struggles through, but March was tough. We went out west. We got, you know, struggled in Winnipeg, got smoked by Edmonton, but then the next night come back, play a back-to-back in Seattle and grind it out a 2-1.
Yeah.
So there was just all these different moments through the year where you thought maybe, okay, you know, this is a good story, these young guys playing, where we just didn't give in and we just fought and found a way to win some games and get ourselves back into it.
You know, there's the old cliche, show me a good goalie, I'll show you a good coach. Alain Vigneault would always say, hockey is easy. If your goaltender is better than my goaltender, you win. But if my goaltender is better than your goaltender, I win. That's how easy hockey is. Can you say a few words about Charlie Lindgren? Actually, first of all, how much did you know about Lindgren before you took this job?
Not a lot. I knew of him from the American League, actually, and through St. Louis's organization and Montreal. And last year, I remember talking to him this summer when I got the job. And it was last year was his first real full season in the National Hockey League. So he sort of checked that box. And then he told me in that conversation that, you know, I feel like I've established myself as a, you know, an NHL roster player that I can play the whole season and was in a backup role. But then he said, I want to prove that now I can be a starter. I can play regularly in the National Hockey League. Like, that's my next step. And has he ever, just since the start of the year, he's arguably been our MVP and produced some unbelievable performances when maybe the numbers and the analytics said that we maybe shouldn't have had the outcome that we did and won some games. And he's been fantastic for us all season long.
He really has. And I know when you talk about, you know, team MVPs on a team with Alex Ovechkin, let me have the Ovechkin conversation with you. Like, here we are at the end of the season, Alex Ovechkin, another 30-goal season, you know, this is a recording, 31 goals. But getting there, there were times where it was like, you know, what's happening with Ovechkin? What's wrong with, I mean, we've had these conversations, what's wrong with Alexander Ovechkin? And then by the end, it's like, okay, he had another Alexander Ovechkin season, you know, the Gretzky record will topple one day. How did you sort of coach through all of it? Did you do anything different? I know, like, all players go through slumps, and I know all goal scorers are streaky. That's just the reality of being a goal scorer in the NHL. Like, how did you coach him through that, the difficult time?
Yeah, we had some really good conversations, and I did some deep dives through the year on trying to figure out some ways to accomplish just that, help him score in certain situations. So we had some really good discussions, whether a couple times we went to his line combinations and who he was playing with, and I've moved him around quite a bit. Like, and I find playing with Bo, usually a line or a centerman will get hot for a few weeks with him,
mm-hmm.
call it 10, 12, and then it sort of gets a little stale, and then you flip it, and then it goes to a different. So we've used that with Strome, McMichael. Even he had a run with Hendricks Lapierre for a while, and they were playing really well. So that was one of the ways. The other way, too, is I think just some things in the offensive zone for him that we got him. Like, I'll give you an example. He started to get to the net a little bit more. Like, he obviously, everybody knows the shot. He can score from the perimeter anywhere. Doesn't need a screen. But trying to find 2, 3, 4, 5 goals where he's on the interior to get him going a little bit with some momentum. So I remember having that conversation. I think that was right before the break in Dallas. Just getting to the net a little bit more. So maybe he could get a few goals. He's feeling good. Now he gets some momentum, and now he's shooting some in the back of the net. And I felt like he did a really good job of doing exactly that. Last night was a prime example. Like, he's on the backside. We shoot one, it hits the middle of the shaft of his stick.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to score there, and then all of a sudden his shot starts to go in, and he's feeling good. And like you, exactly what you pointed out, he starts to get on a run where he's hot, and now pucks are finding their way in the back of the net for him.
You know, it was interesting watching him, too, because, you know, as he was, you know, going through a slump at the start of the season, because I try to watch as many Caps games as I can, but you can point me in the right direction on this one. Longtime Bauer guy, and then all of a sudden, there's a CCM stick in his hand, and then there's, like, a batch of Warrior sticks that he's going through. Like, he knew it himself that he needed to find something. Like, was there anything that you noticed that he was trying to do different other than just trying, you know, 3 or 4 different types of sticks?
Yeah, that's a story for that you can talk to O or Alex, I'm sure, will share. That there was a huge stick issue at the beginning of the year with it's a crazy story, and I don't want to because I don't want to mess up the details of it, but his stick pattern being changed a little bit and them discontinuing it, so it went through a whole exactly what you just described of trying to find the right stick, get back to his pattern or sort of the specifics of what he had used before. So that's why you saw that. And he was toggling around with exactly like different brands and all sorts of different stuff. But I think he settled on one. And then once he got hot, you know, in that post break, February really started to cook, and that's where, And we stayed alive. Like, that March schedule for us, and he was scoring a ton, almost nightly.
Mm-hmm.
When we went out west post deadline, Winnipeg, Edmonton, Seattle, Vancouver, Calgary, and then we came back home, Toronto, Carolina. Like, he was carrying us in terms of production through that stretch.
When you look at your team, like, we'll talk a lot about, we have Charlie Lindgren, Alexander Ovechkin, TJ Oshie, some of the headline makers here, certainly. Who do you think we should focus on? I mean, John Carlson's another one we talk a lot about. Who, from your vantage point, should we talk about more? Like, who are we missing on when we talk about the Washington Capitals?
You know who's really elevated his game this time of year, and I've been really impressed his last 10, especially as we needed guys to step up, is Dylan Strome.
Mm-hmm.
Dylan Strome, and he's talked about, you know, he's had a great year. He's had his most productive year he's had in his career. But I think he, over the last month, has taken another step. And you can see everybody knows the skill set and his vision, playmaking abilities, finishing, all that stuff from back in his junior days. And he's found that in our organization once again. But I think the thing that maybe goes undercover with Stromer, because he's not a real physical, like you may watch him and go, you know, he is a competitor and wants to win as bad as anybody that I've been around. And he, like, is such a fierce in-game, expects so much out of himself, so almost gets, like, frustrated with, he just wants to win desperately. And I've come to really appreciate that. And you appreciate it too when you're delivering in big moments, when your season's on the brink and he's playing huge minutes for us against top line centermen right now and being productive.
Spencer, let me ask you about going into the third period yesterday. So I'm watching this game and, okay, it's a second intermission. I'm thinking to myself, okay, so how's Carberry going to have the team playing here? And I thought this was going to be a sort of Washington Capitals team that was passive, wait for your chances, defensive structure, wait for the opportunity. And I'll be blunt, Spencer, I was stunned at how aggressive you guys were in the third period yesterday. Like the Caps came out and said, no, this is in our hands. And we're going to settle this thing. Going into the third, like, what did you tell the team? What was the mood? What was the vibe? What was the message?
Well, a couple things. One is we discussed as a staff, and then we talked to the team and addressed them in the morning about the scenario, because I wanted everybody to know what was going on. And if Philly pulled the goalie, I wanted everyone to know no one's surprised on the bench. We know exactly how to handle this situation. And so that was the first part of it, was knowing what we were, what the scenario was and the landscape of it. But what I felt like in the second period, we get that 1-0 lead, and I felt in the second period that we thought that we were just going to backpedal our way out of that game and win 1-0 and just hang on, and we were under attack. We sitting back, we weren't skating, we weren't closing, and Philly, it was only a matter of time. They get one. They almost got another one right after to go up 2-1 with Chucky made a massive save on Konechny. So we go in at 1-1, but if we were going to sit back in that last 20 minutes and just think that we could defend our way out of that game and hang on 1-1, I didn't like our chances. And that's not how we play. We have to be on our front foot. And so that's where we changed our mindset a little bit going into the third period and started to skate again and start to pressure them and start to, when we get the puck, we've got to attack. We can't just put a puck in and sit back.
I'll tell you what, it was. I was really happy that it was TJ Oshie that got that overtime goal. That empty net goal, rather. You know, considering everything that he's gone through professionally and personally in his life, was happy that it was him at the end of it. Listen, we're up against the clock. Thanks as always for stopping by. Congratulations. Catch your breath. The Rangers await, Spencer. The Rangers await.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it. Anytime.
There he is, Spencer Carberry, the head coach of the Washington Capitals. They will face off against the New York Rangers. Matt Marchese in the opening round. The we have home ice every series, New York Rangers.
Yeah, that's them. You know, I will say this. Like, I remember having Spencer on when he got the job at the end of last season. And just hearing him there, I know you're doing a lot more media and whatever. He was a delight.
Yeah, he was
great.
He's always been that way.
But very insightful too. Even on the stick stuff, like a lot of coaches probably wouldn't give into that very well. But he did a great job with it. I mean, they're not the most fun team to watch. We know that, but I think that speaks to the job that Spencer Carberry has also done with this group, considering they don't have a lot of elite high-end talent. And they traded a bunch of guys away at the deadline, and they still managed to make the playoffs.
And they made the playoffs. Okay, time now for Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local, Matt Marchese. What's the emotional game of the night?
Oh, we're going with Mania at the Mullet. It's the Oilers at the Coyotes. Puck line is Oilers -1.5. The Oilers are 7-1 straight up in their last 8 overall against the Coyotes, and 7 of the last 8 in Arizona. The over has hit in 5 of the last 7 games between these two teams. Good expensive seats still available.
Yes, that's what it sounds like. It's going to be an emotional one tonight. And normally in a segment like this, we'll talk about the game. But, you know, in a moment like this, when you think about, you know, albeit, I mean, it's not like the longest history the Arizona Coyotes have, but they've been there for a while and it's all over after tonight. And, you know, I was thinking about the Coyotes and memories you have about the Arizona Coyotes. I don't know if Matty ever went to a game in Arizona.
Wasn't able to, no.
I can recall this would have been sometime after the lockout. I was there. I was in Vegas with my ex, and we were driving, going through the Hoover Dam, and I wanted to go to Sedona, which is just such a beautiful part of America. And I got a call from Cliff Fletcher. We were talking, and it said, hey, we're pretty close by. Maybe we'll sneak by and see a Coyotes game. And Cliff Fletcher hooked us up with, like, great seats. This is the old Jobbing.com arena. And Gary Bettman was hosting a season ticket holder conference. And
he came,
and I wandered in. He's like, what are you doing here? I just remember thinking, Jerome McGinley and Sean O'Donnell had a great fight, and it was a wonderful game. And the building was fantastic. One of the hidden gems in the NHL. Was a great place to go see a hockey game. They will be back in Arizona. That team will be back, or a team will be back. It's going to be an emotional night for a lot of people this evening at the Mullet. That was Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. Bet local.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
So as I referenced with Greg Wyshynski a couple of seconds ago with Marc-Andre Fleury, Marc-Andre Fleury returns one more year with the Flower Matt Marchese. $2.5 million is the contract. One more year for one of our favorite netminders. Be season number 21?
Yeah, I think so.
For That's Flower?
Crazy to think that you watch a guy's whole career like that and then go, yeah, he played for 20-plus years.
Is a goalie going to win? Up on the 2003 draft for a second year. I'm always fascinated by, you know, who wins the draft, which means essentially who's the last player standing from that draft.
I don't think he is, because is that not the Pavelski draft too? No.
Yes, it is. Yeah, he's a Pavelski's seventh round.
But Ryan Suter leads that list. So, and Brent Burns is right there too.
Burns isn't slowing down. I can see Ryan Suter maybe calling it a career at the end of this contract.
Yeah, but Brent Burns is still going.
Oh, no. He's gonna keep playing.
Brent Burns is going to play 1,700 games in the NHL. He's at 1,415 right now. Like, I could see him playing another...
Ooh, that's a lot of games.
Man. Okay, maybe not 1,700, but certainly 1,600. Another 3 years, Brent Burns? Playing well still. I guess it depends on how much you like the game, right?
I don't know. I'm with Wish when we talked about Marc-Andre Fleury, and I've always maintained this. This is why I loved Peter Forsberg, even at the end of his career, where everyone was saying essentially, like, okay, you're diminishing your reputation, you're diminishing, you know, the history and the legacy of Peter Forsberg, and leave the stage while they're still clapping, blah, 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 blah.
Still a Hall of Fame player last time.
Dude, man, I always say to everyone, play as long as you can and as long as you want. Make them drag you off the ice.
Yeah.
I don't believe in this, diminishing, you know, your reputation. And like,
As long as there's a job there for you, then who cares? Like, I've always maintained this. This is why I know so many people, and it's such a weird thing. When you talk about owners versus players, how many people take the owner side? It's like, okay, take the billionaire side over the millionaire side. You're supposed to be the underdog in all of this. But the people that take the sides of the owners, I always say, like, if you're an athlete, your window to earn is short.
Yep.
Make as much money as humanly possible. All the time, every single day.
Of course. And when it comes to hockey, your career could be over every single time you step on the ice.
100%.
I do not begrudge them one nickel.
Some OV shifts that I've seen lately would make you lead to believe that he's certainly not ending his career on that shift.
Well, they can't all be like his first shift in the NHL against Columbus, where he's hammering guys behind the net and putting people in the season ticket holders' laps. I think if anyone's earned a shift off here or there,
100%.
It's Ovechkin. But, you know, the one guy, and again, like, just to draw the obvious comparisons, the one guy who has done it shift in, shift out, and you can probably count on one hand, the amount of shifts he's taken off is Crosby.
Yes. And not to dovetail into that, but...
What happens in Pittsburgh?
Boy, oh boy, Jeff. 2 years in a row. I know nothing's like, I don't think Mike Sullivan's going anywhere.
I don't think so.
And when you look at that roster, what changes can you really make?
So the Sullivan thing is, here's what complicates the Sullivan thing. Okay, I'm just gonna present something to you, cold hard business about Mike Sullivan with Pittsburgh. Okay, so he still has term left on his deal and he's making a really healthy salary.
Mm-hmm.
If you're the Pittsburgh Penguins and you're saying to yourself, okay, so long-term, there may be another coach in here, and there probably will be. If you're the Pittsburgh Penguins, knowing that the vacancies are there and other teams will be interested in Mike Sullivan.
Do you trade him?
Do you strategically, you can't do that. We saw that before with the Nordiques and the Rangers with Bergeron. First-round pick went the other way. Those days are done. Phil Esposito made that deal. Would you be wise to fire him knowing that someone will pick him up almost immediately and you'll be off the hook for most of, if not all, of the salary?
I mean,
someone mentioned that to me a while ago when the Pittsburgh Penguins were really like bottoming out and like that was it and everything was going to get blown up and everything. When someone said to me, well, why wouldn't they fire Sullivan now knowing someone will pick him up with all the coaching vacancies and they'll be off the hook? Now, I'm with you. I don't think Sullivan goes anywhere.
I also think that Mike Sullivan is from the Boston area and the people that own the
Fenway Sports
are, you know, kind of from the Boston area. I don't know.
Yeah, they also want to win.
I agree.
But I don't think they're a coaching change away from winning here.
No, they have an aging roster and they don't have a lot in the prospect pool. Like they're young up and coming guys, they don't really have any. Like this is a heck of a heavy lift for Kyle Dubas.
Well, the plan was, and I always come back to this, the plan was the number 6 or the number 7, and that is be 6th or 7th in the conference.
Yeah.
So you're still competitive enough to get there, and then you flame out in the first round, get a couple of gates, and all the while you're building up your prospect pool.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, like, they have started to do that. Like, you saw the Jake Guentzel deal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's prospects.
I know. I went on the air. It happened overnight before trade deadline.
Did.
And I went on the air. I put it out on Twitter. I'm like, everybody wants to jump all over this deal because they didn't get a first-round pick back. But it's like, look at the prospects that they got. Every one of them was performing at a high level at whatever mm-hmm. level they were at. Now, yeah. Are they all going to pan out? Unlikely. But the judging of, this is an entirely different conversation, but judging deals mm-hmm. when they just happened that involved 3 prospects, it's insane. I think you're right. I think they're kind of moving in that direction because they don't have a choice. Mm-hmm. They really don't have a choice because their stars are all over 35. They're all older. Those are their best players. Although, sorry, Erik Karlsson's not 35 yet. But that's what you're looking at right now. So, I don't know. I can't see how changing the coach is going to make any difference there.
No. And that's why that's not going to happen. But it will be curious to see what they do. And I think a lot of us do swing back on the idea of Erik Karlsson and is he still long-term with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Again, that is a very difficult deal to make. And there's only a few teams that could even entertain if they had appetite for. And I think we all do think about the Ottawa Senators.
But why is the deal so difficult to make now with all the money that's changed hands? This cap hit is what it is after.
What are you getting back for Erik Karlsson?
You're talking in terms of the package in return, not necessarily the salary, right?
What do you take out of last night? I know we talked a lot about the icing. I probably should have talked more about the David Perron goal. I just find the icing fascinating. But what did you pull out of all those TJ Oshie empty netter, all of it? John Tortorella not being told about the Detroit Red Wings tying the game. I believe we have some audio of that. Like,
you want to play that now first?
Sure, let's do it. This is Tortorella after the game yesterday. Because what happened last night, if you missed it, the Detroit Red Wings, David Perron scores with 5 seconds remaining. They tie the game, sending it to overtime. The minute it goes into overtime, the Philadelphia Flyers are eliminated. But still, John Tortorella pulls his goaltender with around 3 minutes to go to try to get the win for the Flyers. Here's Torts.
With regards to the goalie pull, were you getting info about the status of the Detroit game, or were you solely focused on this one?
I get info on the Detroit game right after they scored their empty netter. I think it happened pretty close together. But I was pulling them. And that was the right time to pull him. Didn't know anything was going on with Detroit at that time, but immediately after that, our video guys told us that Detroit just went to overtime.
So after the Oshie goal, he's told, don't worry about it. Detroit tied it up. You're out anyway.
Could you imagine? Like,
yeah, hang on. First of all, you know what? You know what I want to know?
What's that?
Who told him?
Who told him what?
Who told John Tortorella that Detroit had gone into overtime?
He
didn't say who. Just said he was told.
Lance just buzzed me and said he gets text alerts.
Of all the coaches in the NHL, and he doesn't like iPads on the bench. We've seen what he does with iPads. He's not going to like, I'm going to pull out my phone here quickly in between face-offs.
That's a good question. I'm assuming that the video coaches, they knew. They probably buzzed to the assistant coach because that's usually who's in conversation. So actually, speaking of...
Rocky Thompson would have told him?
Maybe.
Hey, Tarts. Sorry, bud.
I know you know Rocky. The other thing that caught me last night was we talk about like being aware in the game of what's going... You know, just like about this John Tortorella thing too.
Yeah.
I was watching the Detroit game. I had 3 screens on, but Detroit overtime was just about to start with Montreal, and you could see the players on the bench, and they were talking. And I like to think that I'm pretty good at reading lips, and they were.
You John Boy good?
No.
All right.
I think I'm pretty good, but you could see them talking, and you could see their facial reactions. You could see the body language. Like David Perron knew, that they had pulled the goalie, and that Washington had scored. And Alex DeBrincat was asking Shane Gostisbehere questions. And I think it was along the lines of, well, what do you mean? Like, why would they do that or whatever? And then it gets explained to him and he drops a couple of expletives afterwards. Yeah. Like, are you kidding me? So you could see that even there, Detroit kind of had a feeling that their season was done as well. All in that moment, like whatever, what time did you say it was? 9:54 Eastern?
Was it 9:34
Eastern, I think it was.
9:34, I believe.
I don't know. After 7 o'clock, it all melds together. I didn't even have an idea of what time it was.
There was that like 90 seconds, or really even 60 seconds, where everything came together all at once. Game-tying goal in Montreal, goalie pull, Oshie empty net.
Didn't you have a feeling that Detroit was still going to tie it with their late game heroics that they've had? Like
100%.
I thought it was going to be Lucas Raymond again.
Of course.
And I'm not going to lie, I did not like the goal that Perron scored, but
I digress. Okay, so as someone pointed out to me yesterday, I wasn't going to say this, but I will.
Nice.
So like as someone pointed out to me yesterday, I got a text. Oh, it's harsh. And said, is it not interesting? Because I think we were all on the same page. Like, yeah, that's a tough goal. You got to have that one. So not interesting that it was ex-Flyer Keith Primeau's son that let in the goal that eliminated the Philadelphia Flyers.
I am very much a conspiracy theorist, Jeff. Even that one is a stretch for me. Primeau's actually been really good.
Throw it out there. 100%. Absolutely. He's been really good. He's been real good for this team. What are you going to think about tonight, Edmonton and Arizona?
Well, I feel there's a bunch of people I feel sorry for. I feel sorry for the people that work there, that are even the players. Like I know people will say, oh, they make money, but they're uprooting their life. This is a change. This is if somebody had to move jobs because they got relocated. Like these are human beings at the end of the day. I feel sorry for the people that cover the team. Like Craig Morgan has been on this show countless times.
Yep.
I feel sorry for Craig Morgan.
Leah Merrill, throw her into the mix too. She's excellent.
Those are the people that I feel sorry for. The staff, the arena people that are, they'll still have a job there, but it's different, right? Yep. So I'm sad for the fan base because the fan base, and people can make jokes about however many people there are that are fans of the Arizona Coyotes, but they're still fans of the team and their team is leaving. Yep. And that's hard.
It's going to be an emotional one. One of four games on the board tonight. Tampa and Toronto, the only other game that has any sort of consequences attached to it. You try to see if Matthews gets 70 and if Kucherov
Dallas
gets
Dallas can still clinch the West.
Assists. And there is a clinching scenario. Okay. Although,
but it's all whatever.
Dallas is getting it.
Good luck with your first round matchup.
All right. Thanks to Greg Wyshynski. Thanks to Matt Marchese. Thanks to Spencer Carberry of the going to the playoff Washington Capitals. Elliot Friedman from HockeyNet in Canada. Thanks to Lance Kennedy, technical operator and camera operator, the great Jen Rolnick. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Enjoy an interesting night tonight, an emotional one at Mullet Arena. We'll talk all about all of it tomorrow in 22 hours as the Merrick Show returns to the Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet 360, or wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy the Coyotes' final dance in the desert. Have a great day.